Greetings and welcome to Edgy Ideas, the podcast that explores what it means to live a good life and to create the good society in our disruptive age. My name is Simon Western, and I will be talking to invited guests about diverse topics, exploring social, conscious, and unconscious dynamics and desires. A warm welcome to this episode of Edgy Ideas. Today we are doing something different. I'm going to read a short essay entitled In Praise of the Flask. This essay came about reflecting on what it means to live a good life and to build a good society during COVID time. It explores the art of good living through the lens of the thermos flask. So I will begin. In Praise of the Flask. Wrapping small cold fingers around a hot cup filled with homemade vegetable soup is my earliest recollection of the thermos flask. Sat with my family huddled together on a windswept beach, the sweet aroma escaped from the large green flask as the soup was served with homemade brown bread and butter. Back home in the kitchen, a different flask was used as my mother's yogurt maker, following the centuries-old method. Boiled milk was left to cool until body temperature. A finger dipped in the milk was a test. A spoonful of yogurt was stirred into the warm milk from the previous batch. The flask was filled with the milk, lid screwed on, and 8 hours later, the magic had happened. If Jesus did water to wine, then Mum did milk to yogurt. As a small child, this miracle produced a family delight we all relished. Chilled yogurt served with a large sprinkle of demerara sugar that glistened, then dissolved into a watery syrup. The brown liquid made patterns on the white yogurt, and the sweet taste contrasted beautifully with the sharp, tangy yogurt. From the flask, goodness flowed. In my teenage life, the flask had a different association. It accompanied me on fishing trips with my older brother or with my friends. Little patience made me a poor fisherman, but I loved being free from the parental control and in nature with mates fooling around. There was a very particular and unforgettable smell when fishing, a blend of maggots, sandwiches, and hot flask tea, combined with the musty smell of a freshwater river or lake. Quickly bored, I would devour all my sandwiches in the first hour, having usually lost my fishing tackle in weeds, then off exploring and tree climbing, returning to finish my hot tea and admire my brother's catch. Later, the flask became a transitional object, bridging the gap between home and my travel destinations. It provided the wake-up coffee on my weekly train journey to London to study a master's degree. My garden was next to the railway, and Finn, my young son, would stand on a chair looking over the hedge, waving and hoping to spot me as the train sped past. I would lean out of the train window, waving back madly and catching his grin, before sitting back in my seat, opening the flask and smelling the hot coffee that accompanied the cheese and chutney sandwiches I pulled from my bag. The flask became the connection that would nourish me between the home I left and the bustling, dynamic city that greeted me at Euston Station. It also became my walking companion as I ventured into the mountains of the Lake District in Wales and on our epic journey across the length of the UK from John O'Groats to Land's End. Our lunch breaks and coffee breaks took place in beautiful landscapes. Whether in the bright sunshine or huddled against the wind and rain, the flask was at the heart of the action, in a similar way that the fireplace is a warming hearth of a home. In my young adult life, coffee sandwiches and cakes from cafes and train buffet bars were an exception, an expense beyond my usual budget. Aside from the economics, the flask also became an object of micro-resistance to the onslaught of the consumer's world that was devouring everything in its way, and in the process, transforming our desires and our lives. The rise of the cappuccino cult. The flask as a travel companion slowly became redundant. It was replaced first by plastic, then paper cups of tea and coffee bought at cafes before and at the end of a trip and in train buffet bars during it. As my career progressed, I could now afford to buy coffee on the go, and social norms meant a flask dissolved as a commonplace object, a necessary travel companion for me and many others. Meanwhile, I was taking adventures abroad, and traveling took me across the world, and I delighted in cafe society, I discovered. I lounged in the grand cafes of Krakow, Budapest, Vienna, Paris, and Mexico City. I hung out with my son, meeting travelers and bohemians in the street cafes of Istanbul, Beijing, and Kathmandu, or taking in the sun with friends in the outdoor plaza cafes in Italy, Cuba, and Spain, or writing postcards home in the dark, romantic writers' cafes such as Bewley's Oriental Cafe in Dublin. Back home, cafe society in the UK expanded, breaking out from the binary choice most of us grew up with. There was a posh tea house serving leaf tea in china cups, triangular sandwiches, scones, jam and cream, and Victoria sponge or Dundee fruitcake. Or the working class greasy spoon cafes serving builders' breakfasts, egg and chips with white bread and mugs of strong sugared tea, still a favourite. New family-owned niche cafes emerged, borrowing from our European neighbours, serving espressos and Italian-style cappuccinos. In London and other major cities, continental-owned cafes were already familiar. But these new places were different. They aimed their slick coffee products at a new laptop-carrying digital generation. I delighted in finding these cool cafes to read papers, socialise and write in. Then came the mass expansion of cafe culture, driven by the gentrified hipster cafe cultures born in cities like San Francisco, Seattle, and Melbourne. The cappuccino cult spread rapidly across the Western world, escalating from niche coffee houses into global corporate brands such as Starbucks. Starbucks' business model was to flood an area, killing the small local cafes that had provided diverse aesthetic spaces with delightful home-produced food. Big brands became dominant, pushing local and niche cafes to the margins. They inflicted their conformist decor and cheap-tasting coffee with low-quality food onto the new mass market. As in many other commercial areas, consumers identified more with the brand than with the quality of the product or the service. To join this new elite cappuccino cult meant learning the new hip latte language. Skinny latte, two shots of hazel, please. I watched a friend order his coffee and responding to the question, what kind of coffee, answered, normal coffee with milk, and being looked at with derision by the barista. While avoiding the chains as much as possible, like millions of others, I became seduced by the coffee craze. A good, strong, creamy latte or flat white coffee is a pleasure for sure. Yet my consumption went beyond pleasure and became a habit. The cappuccino cult had become a mainstream norm, an addictive social ritual for me and millions of others. The demise of the flask. The old school coffee flask disappeared in the new world of cool coffee culture. The flask couldn't produce a frothy coffee or the heart-shaped chocolate topping, and it certainly couldn't help you identify with the new brands that produced a tribe of cool coffee aficionados. If Coke was a real thing in the 1970s, cappuccino culture won the day in the new millennium. Branded takeaway coffees with fancy names and prices to match, pre-made supermarket meals and home delivery of pizza and curries created a momentum that changed how people ate and drank. The instant gratification of consuming fast foods and takeaway drinks replaced the delayed gratification of slow foods created with love, care, at home. The flask was an iconic symbol of the slow food way of life. The demise of the flask signified an important social change and a significant loss. The flask was eliminated both as an object of desire and as an object of economic necessity for a growing middle class. The flask was relegated to a few mountain walkers and perhaps a few pensioners who kept the faith. A partial flask comeback happened with the designer water bottle, a flask by another name, which also became part of the new hipster chic. The side pouch of a computer bag needed a designer water bottle to keep up with the cool fad, which to its credit was more sustainable than buying plastic bottles of water, but to its discredit also belonged to consumer culture. Major brands compete to sell their water bottles and their prices match their to be seen with value. The demise of the flask mirrored how the ethic of autonomy and self-sufficiency was lost to the ethic of dependency on consumption. The flask as a transitional object connecting home and the external world had been replaced by the alienating experience of standing in a queue, returning a smile to the tired barista who performed 1,000 smiles a day as part of the emotional labor in their contract. The corporate beast produces its milky comfort food and personalizes the cup, stroking our fragile and needy egos. I have always thought there is something infantilizing about supping warm flavored milk from the plastic lid teat of a coffee cup. COVID-19 and the return of the repressed. The flask had become a repressed memory, a forgotten object that occasionally surfaced on a mountainside when it popped up in an old photo or movie. That is until COVID-19 struck, lockdown took hold, and coffee outlets and cafes shut. An initial common response from friends was how they would cope without their morning latte fix. Daily routines and addictive habits were broken by COVID-19. When not traveling for work and grabbing multiple coffees on the go, my pre-COVID routine was to work at the home office, then take late morning break to move my body and socialize a little. This meant cycling along the coastal path into Galway City to meet a friend for coffee. I would then continue working in the coffice, a family-owned cafe that became my office for an hour or so each day. So now what was I to do? Staying at home all day would drive me insane. How to meet my friend and have a coffee when all the cafes were shut? Then a return of the repressed moment occurred. The flask danced back into my mind and I invited my friend to meet me on Furbo Hill, each of us with a flask of coffee and a sandwich. Furbo Hill is the highest point on the beautiful peat bogland, 7 kilometres outside Galway City, and a good workout to get there on the bike. When on the hill, a 360-degree view greets you. On one side, looking across a peat bog, is Galway Bay. Across the glistening water is a limestone landscape of the Burren in County Clare, reflecting the sunlight and creating a canvas that the cloud shadows dance across. On a clear day, looking out to the Atlantic, the three Aran Islands, Inishmore, Inishman, and Inishere, can be seen gently rising out of the water into the far distance. Turning in the other direction, granite grey boulders sit on the brown-green expanse of wet bogland with wind turbines whirling in the distance. Sat on Furbo Hill with hot sweet coffee, homemade bread and jelly made from the blackberries, sloes or rose hips we picked last year with the children, revitalised my spirits in this extraordinary time. The simple joy of homemade food accompanied by hot drinks in fresh air with beautiful views made me so much more content than the previous routine of being sat in a cafe in town drinking more coffee than was good for me. The flask was resurrected, and from that first visit to Furbo Hill, I now take a flask and sandwich whenever I go walking, canoeing, picnicking, or cycling. Previously, I would stop at a garage or a cafe for a takeaway coffee and a sugary fat muffin when on my road bike. Now I find sheltered spots to rest, read a book or paper, and drink tea or coffee with homemade bread and an apple. Favourite spots are a small derelict schoolhouse built in 1958 on top of the bog, or the old church and graveyard overlooking beautiful Spittle Harbour in Connemara. Flask time is liberation time. I realised that consumer addiction had crept upon me. A social injunction demanded I reward myself with milky caffeine and a biscuit or cake I didn't really want, need, or enjoy. Being liberated from this ritual is not only a relief, but has also recovered an old pleasure that I call flask time. Flask time transcends ordinary time. In the church, ordinary time is a time between special spiritual seasons, for example, Advent, Easter, or Christmas. Flask time is also a special time that, in a different way, sits outside of ordinary time. When I take our two children on our tricycle bike to their favourite playground, and I sit on fishing nets, leaning against the lobster pots on the beautiful cladder overlooking Galway Harbour, I enter flask time, a time of peace, a time of reflection, and a time of deep pleasure. Flash time merges past, present, and future. Past. Flash time reconnects me to the past that lives within me, to my childhood memories of being with my family on holidays. As two brothers and both parents have now passed, this evocation is both subtle and powerful. Flash time also connects me to the picnics I shared with my son Finn when I was a home parent taking our sandwiches to Chester Cathedral Gardens or sitting on the canal path together. I lost Finn 10 years ago, and flash time often evokes his delight when picnicking or his smile when waving as my train sped past. The present. Flash time in the present day means sharing the delights of eating, resting outdoors with my wife and children on our family picnics, on a canoe expedition together, or on the secret limestone pavement we found hidden away near Menlo Village, with its marvellous water-formed rock shapes and magical plant life. Flash time, when alone, brings me a special peace, a space to listen to nature, to the sea washing up on beach pebbles, or the grasses rustle in the wind, and also to listen to what my internal nature is communicating to me. The future. Flash time connects me to the future as my children will internalize the same experience I did as a child, recalling our picnics and simple yet transcendent pleasures. My children help me to make homemade breads and jams and turn these into the sandwiches we share with the hot drinks in the outdoor spaces. They will take flash time into their futures in their own particular ways. Quiet moments on my own, reconnecting to nature and listening to the children play on the swings as I watch cormorants fish for their dinner in a harbour, also connects me to the future. It opens a space for drifting, allowing my unconscious to speak, my imagination and creativity to manifest, and in doing so, provides new ideas for future writing, work, life plans to emerge. Flash time reconnects me to living the good life, a depth experience that goes beyond the stimulus of noise, busyness, and instant gratification. When on a monastic retreat at the Camaldolese Hermitage on the Big Sur, California, a monk told me that I had a strong monk within and that I should make time to nurture it. Flash time has become a time I nurture my monk within, taking me into a deep, peaceful experience that guides my soul. Flash time is an act of resistance, bypassing the consumer experience that always demands excess from us, whether another coffee, cake, or buying a designer water bottle. It liberates me so that I now feel free to choose when I have a flat white and when I visit one of my favorite cafes. I visit them because I really want to, not because of an addictive habit or an injunction that demands I follow a social norm. Freed from the compulsion of excess coffee consumption, the pleasures of the occasional special coffee is renewed. Freed from being sat indoors or tied to being within a walking distance of a coffee shop, I can now drink coffee wherever my bike and soul take me. Writing in praise of the flask is a way of revisiting what is important in life, of asking myself what really matters. What rituals, patterns, and social norms have I drifted into that disrupt what helps me to live a good life? The flask symbolizes autonomy and self-sufficiency, breaking free from the dependency consumerist culture that entraps us all. It is one of the small steps towards building a good society, free from the disabling consumerist habits of constantly chasing surplus enjoyment and instant gratification. Flask time produces special moments that allow us to stand outside of ordinary time and commune with our souls, with nature, and to experience the sublime. Flash time is a symbolic time of emancipation. Perhaps you have your own version of flash time that has become repressed or lost. Now is the time to rediscover the flash time in your life and to praise it once again. Thank you for listening to Edgy Ideas. Listening to Edgy Ideas. If you enjoyed our podcast and would like more information about our coaching, training, and events, please contact simon@analyticnetwork.com or go to www.analyticnetwork.com. Thank you for listening.